Blog Talk Radio.
Boss Lady Publishing.
How's everybody doing today? Tony, Aaron.
Hey, Leisha.
Hey. How's everybody's weekend going? Good, good.
I guess I had a good weekend.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, boss lady.
I'm here. I'm ready to see where we're taking this show. It's going to be a great show. You got two different moms, two great stories of triumph of where they were able to take, the tragedies that started in their lives and be able to flip those around. And we're going to see how they were able to do that, what strength it took to do that. And I'm really interested in hearing what it is that they're going to have to say and what they're going to share with our listeners. And it's going to be a really good show.
Absolutely.
How's Aaron? Aaron there? What's up, Aaron? What you doing over there?
I'm chilling.
You chilling?
Yeah. It's been a long day.
It has been a long day. We're all writing, trying to get, these great books to these readers. And, it's tough. Some days the words flow. Some days you sit stagnant for a minute till you can grab a hold of the story and, spit those lines out onto those pages because you want to give them the best you got. But other than that, everything is going great, great, great. Aaron, I see that cash done pop back up.
They found where I buried him. I see he popped back up. I don't see any book yet, though.
We're going to have to see what's going on with that.
Don't come out your grave without the shovel.
Oh, crazy.
I'm not tough people with... People, all the Leisha's over there right now entertaining herself along with everyone else. I'm just saying, like, don't keep waving this pistol at me. I handed it to you empty, so I already know you're not going to shoot anybody.
That's the thing. If you know, we don't carry pistols around these parts.
What y'all got? Choppers? Like, Cassie, I got some choppers.
Right.
His gun was empty last week.
Listen, man, I'm like Michael Pat.
It's full today. It's going down.
You don't know what Cash said because we ain't heard from Cash yet. How do we know? Because you don't know what happened to the last two bodyguards.
All I gotta say is duck. Okay, Bebo, just duck. Because that can't be about to come down right on top
now
of your
head. I'm going to tell you something. I don't think anybody should get into any excessive playful mood because last week all of y'all was mourning. Y'all was upset at me. So when it was my moment and I was happy and I wanted to play, y'all told me, hey, go sit down. You're being unsportsmanlike.
Yeah.
So I
that's not what I said.
There's no more playing.
Me either.
I don't want to play
anymore. That's not what we said. I said go ahead on and let him ride his little surfboard now. Let him ride his surfboard. Go ahead and put him
on
the surfboard.
He's
on the wave in a minute.
People falling all out in the front row talking about take me, take me. So,
I'm done.
You are crazy.
I am done.
Take me.
In all seriousness, Lord have mercy. It is a really good competition. You know, the friendly competition that was put on is still pending. We can't wait to get, you know, both books and have them compared to each other and, you know, just show the industry that you can do something other than have real beef, have productive, playful, you know, banter back and forth, as well as drop two good books on the readers, which is Till My Casket Drops. They're going to be excited when everything gets back into motion. So I'm looking forward to that. In the meantime, in between time, before we even pay these bills, I need Aaron to drop that Ace Hood beat to get us into the spirit of what's about to happen on this show today. You know, mother's love, a mother's love. There's no love like a mother's love. You know, it's before they even arrive and are in our arms and well past anything that could take them away from that position in our arms, that they never would leave our hearts. So in the spirit of that, before we get them on here to tell us how they were able to turn, you know, their tragedies into triumph and, you know, fight and be advocates in their communities and make people aware of, you know, what's going on. Let's have that beat, then we'll come back and introduce everything that's going to happen on this show tonight, get them on here and, you know, talk about these real issues. So, Aaron, if you don't mind, that Ace Hood Mama, drop that beat.
Special, I was born in God's favor. Mama gave birth in tears through that hard labor. I just want to thank you, ain't no way I could repay you. Strongest woman that I know, you've been my motivator. And just know I'll be everything that you said I would. Only focus is hoping that all my family good. A lot of ups and downs, a lot of hard times, a lot of cloudy days praying for that sun to shine. I was hard-headed, granddaddy diabetic. Lord bless the soul, granny kept the school ready. Five kids, three jobs, how you ever did it? Trying to make a living, hustle got me reminiscing. Daddy chose lust over all us. Tell me what's the type of man who never kept in touch? How do you feel? Mama showed me the real. Can't recover them years, too much emotion to feel. We was covered in bills, mama taking them pills. Gotta stress it for days, so why the fuck ain't you here? That's why I love her to death. She was there when they left, praying for me every day, Lord, honor my step. I hope you hear me loud, if your mama's around. Gotta cherish the love, gotta save with a smile. Never fall for nothing, gotta keep it 100. You are the epitome of a strong black woman, you hear me?
Mama, can you hear me?
Mama,
can you hear me?
Mama, can you hear me?
Mama, I just wanna say I love you. And if you left today, I don't know what I'd ever do. Saying this, boy, ain't nothing like your mama. Through the roadblocks, fake friends and the drama. Some old girlfriends and a chick named Karma. Real eyes, real eyes, I can call on her. Any time of day, any time of night. Been there from the start up on this journey called life. Now I'm 24 and grown. touring, doing shows. Thankful for it all, know it's been a bumpy road. As I'm staring at my Rolex, started reminiscing. Boy, my bad ass used to run from all them whippings, but I understand, made me a better man. You hear me, mama, told you you would never want again. I put my pain on the beat and fed it all to the streets. I'm a believer in me, and now we living the dream. Oh, Lord, black boy by the Deerfield. Who'd have thought that I'd be counting up a couple mil? All on TV and on magazines with label deals. Talking about the struggle, starting to give a nigga chills. God answer prayers, people still hate. Wasn't for my mama, don't know where I'd be today. Lord have mercy, don't know where I'd be today.
Truth. And that's what I was saying before we went into commercial break was, you know, that mother's love, you know, it's no love like, you know, a mother's love, and nothing can replace it or, you know, go in the place of it. And like I said, it's from the moment, you know that they're inside your stomach, and it goes way past that first time you hold them in your arms. And then, you know, you have mothers who have lost. And these two women have been able to turn their, you know, their tragedy into a triumph, and, you know, be able to use that love to empower others and to strengthen others and to help others heal. So that is awesome and phenomenal. We're going to do something a little different tonight. We're not going to run all the rigmarole about, you know, books and everything like that. We're going to try to put our full attention tonight on our guests and, you know, their powerful, powerful message that they're going to be bringing to us. So if we could just go ahead, ladies, and run that bio for Ms. Charnell. And we can be able to bring her in the clubhouse and let her share her spirit with us. So if we can do that, whoever's doing the bios, let's get those read. And let's get her on in here and, you know, share this experience with her.
Absolutely. Author Charnell Williams, born and raised in Newark, New Jersey, is a mother, a grandmother, and a writer. She has two nonfiction books out. Her first book is called What Do a Mother Do? The Shaquille Williams Story. Her second nonfiction book is called A Mother's Worst Nightmare. And she also has Our Story, Share Our Angels. Now, she does have a co-author, author Nicole Martin, which was previously on our show, who wrote this book with her. Now, she also has a third book, which is a fiction book, and that's called I'm Black, He's White, which is coming soon. And
okay.
She has several projects going on, so I'm excited to hear what exactly she has in store for us. She also started her own nonprofit organization to help families and kids with childhood cancers. Her goal is to have Tyler Perry turn her first book into a movie. Well,
all right.
Let's bring on our third,
Charnell
Williams.
570, good evening. You are live.
Hello.
In the right and hello. Charnell.
Hey, how are you?
Yes, hello, hello, hi, everyone, hi.
Hey, how are you? This is Nene.
Okay. Hi, Nene.
How are things?
Okay.
Okay, I first have to say thank you for coming on our show. Charnell Williams is one of the first to have me on her show when our book first debuted, and I really, really thank her for reaching out to me and making sure that my voice was heard and that the readers were able to know who Nene Capri was. So I really, really thank you, and I'm happy that now we have a platform to bring you on so that you can share your journey with us and your love and your spirit on our show. So thank you very much for coming.
And thank you for having me on your show. Thank you.
Yes, yes, yes. But it's a great evening that we would like to have tonight and sharing, you know, the love and the spirit of a mother and, you know, what that all really means, you know, and to be able to turn, you know, that tragedy into a triumph and be able to do some great things in your son's honor and in his name. If you can you please give us a little history on, you know, what brought all of this mission on and the things that you're doing to honor him?
Okay, well, first of all, this is Arthur Charnell Williams. My son was diagnosed back in 2005. Could y'all hear me clearly?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. My son was diagnosed with leukemia, and that's a form of cancer of the blood, back in 2005. He battled the whole time for 6 months, leukemia, in and out the hospital, blood transfusion, platelets, the whole nine, throwing up, lost his hair and everything. So we went through that for 6 whole months, 2 days after his birthday, 2005 in December. December the 18th, his birthday was December the 16th, I lost him. And the doctor say it's not to cancer, so stop telling everybody I lost him to cancer. I lost him to an infection. You know, everybody gets them diseases, they have a complication of infections. So
right.
He didn't pass away from leukemia, he passed away from infection of his lungs.
Okay. All right. And then... Okay, what you had that happen, which we're sorry to have that happen for you. However, at what point were you able to grasp your strength and your voice and write and, you know, be able to start these different organizations to say, okay, I'm going to take control of these feelings and try to do something, you know, in honor of his memory.
Okay, for one thing, let me let y'all know, because I didn't say this. He was diagnosed at the age of 11. He passed away 2 days after his birthday at the age of 12.
Okay.
And the memory, if any one of y'all familiar, at least I know Nene is, with Newark, New Jersey,
mm-hmm.
the executive county of Newark, New Jersey named the kids' playground Branchville Park, the Shaquille
uh-huh.
Williams playground. So that was
mm-hmm.
dedicated from the city to our family.
That's a blessing.
Yeah.
And what else? Sorry, I'm tearing up because it's not easy, like, really keep talking about it and reliving it.
Right.
Even though it happened in 2005, it's still, like, hard on a mother no matter how long it
right.
happened, how old the child was. But
right.
I started writing. It was kind of funny because a nurse, I used to sit in my son's room, and
mm-hmm.
everything he go through, if he vomit, spit up blood, whatever he go through that day, I'm writing it in my pad. And I just
okay.
kept writing it in my pad. Everything he went through that day, what type of medicine they gave him, whatever it was, I wrote it down.
Mm-hmm.
So the day of his funeral, a nurse that was taking care of my son while he was in the hospital, she was at the funeral, and she came. She said, "Chanel, I know this might not be the time, but I might not ever see you again, so I need to tell you this now." So I was like, "Yes." So then she was like, "That journal you've been keeping of Shaquille, turn it into a book. Write a story,
yeah.
help others." So I was like, turn it into a book. Now, you know, I can't say I was a writer since I was five. I was writing since I was five, because
right.
writing a book never came to my mind. I never thought
okay.
about writing a book.
Okay.
So when she told me that, I was like, write a book. She was like, yes, everything, you know, you kept in your journal, turn it into a book and write a book about it. So I was like, a book? And she was like, yes, maybe you can help other mothers or other parents that going through the similar situation that you went through. Whatever you wrote down on that paper, write it in a book. Don't change nothing, because it's coming from your heart.
Mm-hmm.
So don't change nothing. So 2006, after they dedicated the park, Branchville Park, Newark, New Jersey, to my son, she was at the event. And she was like, did you start on a book yet? I was like, start on a book? Because it really slipped my mind. I said, start
mm-hmm.
on a book. She said, yeah, you got to get it out there and touch other mothers, because you're not the only one that is going through that. So I was like, I just, you know, the man was talking. I was concentrating on what she was telling me, like to change, turn my story into a book. So then after that, a couple of months went by. Then I told my husband, I think I do want to write a book. He said, write a book. I was like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
maybe I could just, you know, help others. You never know, you know. I said, things happen for a reason. At the time when my son was sick, I didn't believe that things happen for a reason. I didn't believe
right.
nothing. But then as months went by, I started believing maybe things do happen for a reason. And then I just started writing.
Wow. So the actual book, is it the pages of your actual tablet that you were keeping up with, or is it stories? How is it actually put together?
It's put together as the stories I was keeping up with. It was like, excuse me, I was going through a publishing company, and they wanted me to turn stuff around. You know how them publishing companies is. Once you
right.
turn this around, you don't think this is. But I was like, it's coming from my heart. Keep it everything like it was. So
okay.
they kept some of it like it was. Matter of fact, majority of it like it was. And
okay.
everything I wrote down, I probably changed a little bit of this, a little bit of that, because I didn't want to give out, like, put the doctor's names in it or put the nurse's names in it and stuff like that. So I took their names out.
Okay.
Other than that, everything, like, is basically what I went through as a mother, me and his father.
Okay. Okay. So then you wrote the first book, and you were using it, you know, to help really started off helping you into the healing process.
Right.
And was it therapeutic for you? Like, getting that stuff out, did it help you with the process? Was it very helpful for you?
Well, at the time, I didn't think about it at the time. But
mm-hmm.
as the book got published, and then when I wrote the second book with another author, I started thinking about, like, if it was 2006, 2007, I couldn't tell this story. I wouldn't be able to talk to you on the phone right now if it was back some couple of years ago. So, yes, it did help a lot. It helped because you know why it helped? Because not getting into my second book, but once you meet a mother and a mother had been through and felt what I felt because she lost her child too, that's help. That's help right there because you can talk. Y'all can relate. So once I met Nicole, you know, it just seemed like, oh, my God, I met somebody whose child passed away. It wasn't a good thing because I'm not saying that was good that her child passed away, but it was good on a relationship because she felt my pain and I felt her pain, and we knew what each other went through.
Yeah, and it's very helpful to be able to form groups and, you know, support systems that, you know, you can have somebody because, you know, being a mother myself, you know, I can say that I empathize with you because I have a child, you know, but to say I sympathize with you like I've been through it, it's a whole different brand of emotion. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So to have somebody who can actually sit with you and you guys can share those feelings and those emotions and help make each other stronger, I'm quite sure that that is, you know, what you were feeling, not like, oh, you know, here goes somebody else, but like, yay, I got somebody who I can sit down
that
and talk to.
That really
understands. Exactly, exactly. And when you speak of, you know, starting, you know, groups and things, I know you have an organization that you form.
I'm working on a nonprofit organization. I'm working on it because I feel as though, like, until it happened to your child, you don't understand, like, until it happened to my child, let me just rephrase that. I didn't understand once I walked in that hospital and seen all them sick kids. They don't, you know, we out on the street, we don't think about the kid. Well, some people don't think about all the kids that land in the hospital that's sick, dying, just passed away until something happened to your child. You understand? And that's how I felt at the time. So now I'm putting together an organization to help childhood families with childhood cancer because at that time, my husband had to stop working, so that was one less income. We were struggling really because it was only one parent working, and we couldn't be homeless. And plus, you know, stay at the hospital and quit our job. So one of us had to work and one of us had to stay at the hospital.
Right.
So I choose to work and my husband chose to stay at the hospital. And that's how we survived and stayed in our apartment and paid the bills by one of us working. So this is what I'm trying to do to other families because I know I wasn't the only one that was struggling to pay the bill, but you still want to go see your child in the hospital, so you have to miss work. So I'm trying to put together some organization that can help parents still work, pay their bills, and, you know, sit with their child without worrying about, oh, if I don't go to work today, you know, that's going to be one last bill and trying to think about what bill should I pay? I only got enough to pay this bill because I was sitting with Junior in the hospital for 3 days. You understand what I'm saying? I want to make it easier because I've been there, so I know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So how far are you into the process? Is it coming along really good? Do you have a name for it?
I just got the name for it. So I'm just working on the paperwork. You know, I live in Pennsylvania. They want to know everything. So now I'm just working on the process of all the paperwork, and I got to mail all the paperwork, make sure everything is correct because they'll send it back to you. So I'm in the process of doing all the paperwork and filling out, but they approved me for my name already. So
okay. Well, that's a blessing, and I hope that everything really takes off and that, you know, the mothers will be able to get inside that organization and get strength, you know, and everything like that, you know, because that's what it's about. It's about, you know, being able to be strong, and when I look at your situation, a lot of people don't know that, you know, while Wahida was incarcerated, her daughter was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, and we almost lost her. And she was, you know, she had just had a baby, she had just gotten married, and it was a lot on the family as a whole, and it was a lot on her. She was able to remain strong, and, you know, we was able to get the proper, you know, treatments and stuff for her to pull through it. But I can only imagine, you know, what she was going through because she was away, you know, in prison, like so many thousand miles away, she couldn't even be by her side. So, you know, I can imagine what it's like you know, for both of you, you know, looking at that type of situation when it's your child and all you want to do is heal them or either replace them, you know, just take their place.
It feels bad as a mother because you're so used to, your child get a sniffle, which you get them some cough medicine or whatever. You get them something. Your child gets sick, you take them to the emergency room, they come back home. But I felt this so bad because I was powerless. I couldn't do nothing. And if you have a child, you feel so powerless that you can't do nothing. You feel, to me, on my side, I was like ashamed. Like, that's my son. I should be able to put him through anything. You know, you here as a mother and a father to protect your child for anything.
Right. Right.
But I couldn't protect my child from cancer. And I felt bad at the time. You know, it really hurt me to my heart. And I just kept asking God, why? But then my husband was like, you can't question God. Don't ever question God. Things happen for a reason. But I was still questioning him at the time.
Right. And I can definitely see where those questions come from. I mean, I've spoke to a lot of different mothers who have lost children in the womb and still mourn, you know, as if they held them or had them for years or lost them, you know, early on, you know, right after they born. We had Shauna on here from G Street Chronicles a few weeks back, and she was explaining to us how she had lost her baby only hours after and still had to, you know, bury him and, you know, do all the things that you would have to do if it was a, you know, an older child and how hard that was for her. So I don't really think it matters at what point, you know, when something falls short like that, it's hard to get past, you know.
But that's the point I'm making because I had a stillborn too. Well, I had a stillborn, and it was in 92. Shaquille was born in 1993. I put that in my book, too. I put everything. I started from the beginning of Shaquille life. And I had a stillborn, and that made me, like, stronger and, like, protected over Shaquille because I had just lost a baby 9 months, carried a baby 9 months. And then for the doctor to tell you they can't find a heartbeat and you had to push that baby out, like, you know, like it was alive and, like, you was about to hold the baby and take the baby home. I went through all that. I put it in my book, too. I went through it, and it's hard. And that's why I felt as though, like, when I had Shaquille, the next year I got pregnant again, and I just treasure him. But I don't know. It's just that, you know, things happen for a reason. I had 12 years with him, and I'll never regret, you know, I had 12 years. With him, so.
And that's a blessing.
God gave me that time, right?
Yes, and he entrusted you to be able to take care of that spirit for him. You know what I'm saying? For as long as he was supposed to be on the earth, his life impacted many. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so even short as it may seem to us to have been, he served his purpose that, you know, the Lord put him on the planet to serve. So that in itself is a huge blessing. And, you know, we're thankful that we are able to even, you know, help the Lord with bringing his angels into this, you know, this world. So that's a good thing.
Right.
But we're going to be able to continue this conversation with you. We have another mother who's going to come on here. She lost her sons in a very different type of way. She's going to come on here and share her strengths and her joys and her pains with us so we can continue to grow in this show. We're going to take a quick break before we bring her on here.
I have a quick
Aaron.
Question.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Real quick. Excuse me, Shana, do you have any more children?
Well, he's still my baby. He's 26, so.
Okay.
You got an old man over there.
Yeah.
No, I totally understand now. Because, you know, honestly, it's always so hard to do these type of interviews.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like it's a very sensitive issue, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to sound insensitive or anything, so I just was wondering if you had any more children, because I was going to add, I just wanted to know what your outlook would be, like, because you went through the stillbirth, and then, you know, you lost another child, like, that's just, I don't know, that's
yeah,
definitely
yeah, I have an older, yeah, I have an older son, 26 years old, so.
And you had all the boys?
Yeah, no, my stillborn was a girl.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Well, You have that angel, and I know you probably smother him to death with hugs and kisses and overprotection at times, huh?
You know how young men can be. Mom, yeah. His father name, we call him Big Kevin, and my son named Little Kevin, and I always say Little Kevin. He's like, I'm Little Kevin, I'm 26 years old, not Little Kevin. You know, they want to take you out.
I'm trying to have some independence over here, woman, and you zipping his jacket for him, tying his shoes, like, look now. You cross at the green, you hear me?
Right. Did you make your lunch today? Yeah. Now you know you got to have a good lunch when you go on to work now.
Yes. That's a blessing. But let us take this commercial break. We're going to play that Lauryn Hill joint. Aaron, if you could drop that beat for us so that we can go ahead and bring Miss Taylor in here so that we can continue to share their wonderful, wonderful spirit and mother's love with our listeners.
Okay.
One day, I'm going to understand. Zion.
My word. Okay, how many people in here have ever been in love? I know none of the guys don't raise their hand. How many of y'all ever been in love? But I know none of the guys been in love. We don't get
That song is so powerful. It is so, so, so powerful. And it says a lot. You know, it says a whole lot in that mother's love. You know, like we talked about earlier, how it starts, you know, that moment of knowing that you have that little one inside of you and that love just starts to grow. And it carries on and on and on, no matter how old they get. You feel me? Like, that's my baby. They be big and grown. It doesn't matter. That's your baby. So if we could go ahead, do we still have Charnel on the line? Did she come back through? Is she on the line?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Okay, we have her. We're going to go ahead and read Ms. Taylor's bio, and we're going to bring her in here and allow her to go ahead and share her spirit with us.
Yes.
Alicia?
Lorraine Taylor. Yes. Lorraine Taylor is the founder and CEO of 100 Mothers to Prevent Violence. She founded the organization in response to the tragic murders of her 22-year-old sons at the same time on February 8th, 2000 in the city of Oakland. A community organizer and activist, Lorraine serves as an advisor to the Oakland Police Department. In 2013, her nonprofit, 1,000 Mothers, to Prevent Violence was the featured community-based organization at OPD Open House. A prayer warrior and renowned gospel recording artist, she has recorded 2 CDs and has written over 25 songs. She received numerous awards and honors, including the ABC Channel 7 TV Profiles of Excellence, the Oakland A's Bullpen Relief Award, the Bay Area Jefferson Award, Legal Community Against Violence Distinguished Leadership Award, a Community Crusader. Lorraine was named by Ebony Magazine as one of the 100 most influential African Americans in the U.S. in 2013, along with Oprah, T.D. Jakes, Magic Johnson, and other prominent Americans. She holds a B.A., MHROD Nonprofit Management Certificate in an MSW candidate. And let's bring in Ms. Lorraine Taylor.
All right. And her number is Lisa.
Hey, Ms. Lorraine, how are you?
Hello, Lisa, how are you?
I'm good.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes, welcome. This is Nene Capri. We also have Miss Tony. We have author Charnel Williams on the line. And we also have Aaron Bebo, one of our other authors.
Wow.
And yes, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming out and sharing your spirit with us. And we're going to go ahead and finish kicking off this great interview and see where we go from here. Miss Tony?
Yeah, from here.
Okay, how are you, Ms. Lorraine?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me join you tonight, and I'm so happy to be in the clubhouse with such wonderful hosts. I love your show, by the way. I really do.
Thank you so much.
We are honored to have you.
Thank you.
I just want to ask you if you could just go back and just tell us a little bit about what happened with your twin boys?
Yes, it was on February 9th, a day after I had been murdered. I got a call from my son, Gregory. God bless me, was 3 times. And Gregory Jr. is the youngest of the 3. The twins were born. They were my firstborns, if that's the word, firstborns.
Mm-hmm.
And Gregory called me, and he said to me, Mom, I want you to stop what you're doing and pray for strength. And I immediately ran to my sofa, fell on my knees, and said a quick prayer, wondering why, and
one ear near the phone, one towards heaven, very confused. And 20 minutes later, he called me back and he said, "Mom, we lost them." And I asked him, "What do you mean, we lost them?" And he said, "My brother, Mom, my brother." Mm. And we learned that day that my twin sons, Alpha D and Obadiah, 22-year-old college students, had been murdered while working on a car in the city of Oakland.
Mm.
And, of course, that event changed my life forever. I suffered a nervous breakdown, probably more than once. I'm sure it was more than once. And at one time, I literally lost my mind. Even after the funeral, I was in a stage of shock and disbelief because
right.
I never would have ever imagined my sons being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
Not just at the same time, but period. That's never crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, being a mom of, this is still Tony, Ms. Lorraine, being a mom of two sons myself, and I have one away at college, you know, that's like one thing you just pray for, that they're kept safe. I mean, I literally say a prayer over my mm-hmm. son every single day. You know, I just ask for strength and a hedge of protection just to be placed around them because they're out of your sight. You know, you can't see them.
Yeah.
You can't feel them. And the only thing that you could do is just ask for a hedge of protection to be placed around them.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
You can't drop the ball. I learned my lesson, and I don't think I was praying enough. And I had some guilt because my boys grew up in Alameda, which is a little small island where there is no violence. And it's like growing up in the South. I grew up in the South, and around 5 o'clock every morning, you hear the chicken, the rooster crow, and you learn to sleep through it. And I knew on the other side of the tube there was violence in Oakland, and I kind of tuned it out. And part of my guilt is that I didn't do anything at that time. I encourage family members, families and friends, don't wait. Don't think that it can't happen to you. We don't want it to happen, but realize that it is a problem. It's actually, what do we call it? It's just terrible in the city of Oakland. You can't ignore it. Do something. Do something. Don't wait.
Mm-hmm.
Don't wait. Tomorrow could be too late.
Mm-hmm.
I actually lost my mind. I was sitting at the table one day writing a song on that tape recorder, the old tape recorders that we used to have, and my son Gregory walked in the door. My boys look so much alike. They look like triplets. And Gregory looked more like his oldest twin brother than the twin did. They were fraternal twins. And he walked in the door, and I just knew everything that I had heard was a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I started calling him by his brother's name and thinking, and oh, my God, this was a nightmare. Here come Alba D. And he let the tape recorder continue to run. And he was like, "Mother, I'm not Alba D. I'm Gregory." For about 10 minutes, I was out of my mind. This type of trauma is just not something I would wish on my worst enemy. So keep praying for your babies. And that's what we do. We pray that God would keep a protection, hands of protection around them, that there will be no hurt, harm, and danger. We love our children so much.
Right.
We're just not wired up to lose them like that before us.
Right, right. Because you don't have them preparing to have to, you know, put them down before you go. You know, you're always saying, as a mother, you're like, okay, I'm going to take care of them really, really good and do everything I'm supposed to do, you know, with this entrusted gift. And then I'm going to go ahead on about my business, and they're going to carry on. You know, you put yourself for that.
Absolutely.
Yes.
That's our dream. That's our dream. I have a calendar. Every Saturday I facilitate a support group, and today we had two officers, one sergeant and one officer from the Oakland Police Department homicide unit, and I showed them this calendar. At least 100 mostly African-Americans lose their lives in the city of Oakland per year. And since losing my own twin sons, there has been over 1,000. That's a lot of generations. And I have no grandchildren, I told them, because one of my twin sons would have been married by now, and Gregory now asked, why does anyone want to bring a child into this mean world? He's still traumatized. So here I am without any children, and many mothers like myself or don't have grandchildren because they lost their children, their sons.
Right, right. So the legacy doesn't get carried on. And, you know, the tragedy of it is that people like Aaron was talking about last night when he was talking about we were watching the first 48. Well, he was watching it. I was on the phone with him. And he was talking about a mother who had been welcomed into the interrogation room so they could pretty much draw a story out of her son. And, you know, her feeling of emotion was like, you know, wow, you took someone else's life, you know. But at the same time, her son is losing his life, but it's still not the same because he can still see his mother. You know, he can still have a relationship.
It was a real powerful moment. It was crazy. Like,
it's
I was
a double loss.
Watching it.
It's a double loss, Aaron.
Because
you know you're losing your sons, and then that's generations, and then our black men who are committing these murders and crimes, they're going into the prison system, and they're going away for like ever, and then that's a whole other generation that we're losing out on.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I think that's the part that really made me the saddest. Like I was honestly more sad for his mother. Her reaction when they brought her in, and you know he was crying and he was like, I can't do all this time, and she like, you really killed somebody? And he was like, yeah.
And
she was like, you know, he had a nickname. I think she called him Fat Daddy or something, and she was like, don't cry, Fat Daddy. And then she was like, listen, but you know, you got to think about what his family going through. And
it's so sad.
The hurt, like, yeah, like she's telling her boy, like, don't cry. Now you have to be a man under these sad, tragic circumstances and think about what his family's going through. And it was just more, I was watching her walk out the room, and I'm like, damn, like.
Wow. I tell the guys when I go to the prison, or sometimes I'll go to San Quentin and other institutions where there are prisoners who have made that terrible decision to take another person's life. And I tell them, I lost my sons to the grave. Your mother lost you also to this system.
Right.
It's a loss.
Yeah, because they'll never be married. They'll never have children. Like, you know, so the feeling like you're feeling, you know, like it's like, and it's sad because, I'm not to cut you off, Aaron, but I can remember when my, you know, my uncle was murdered. And we was going through the whole system of, you know, the courts and everything, and they were asking my grandmother for the death penalty. And, you know, they let the victims get on the stand. And I can remember this is vivid, my grandmother saying, you know, I don't want another family to feel the hurt that I feel. She said, I would never want another mother to have to bury her son. So she went against the death penalty. And I said, that had to be very hard for her because as a mother, if somebody do something to your child, your immediate reaction is like, you know, take them too, you know. But I can imagine what she had to go through, you know, toiling over that decision to say, I'm not going to go for that, you know. She was like, he'll serve his time, he'll be punished, but I would not want to do that to somebody else's mother, you know.
That's a lot of emotion. She and I think alike, but there was a mother in a support group today who's still hurting, is very angry. We don't judge them as a facilitator how they are, how they're feeling or what stage they're in their grief. She said the same thing. That's my baby. Her son has been targeted. He was shot. Her daughter was shot, and we were working on trying to find a place where we can send them outside of Oakland to save their lives. And she's feeling the same way. That's how I feel. When someone hurt my baby, I want to go hurt them. Hurt people normally hurt people. That's the way it is.
Lorraine, let me ask you a question. Oh, okay.
Wait, hold it. Go ahead.
No, please. I'm going to go next.
Okay.
Hey, Ms. Lorraine, this is Alicia. How you doing?
Hi, Alicia. I'm well. Thank you. Thank you for inviting
me
to your show.
Thank you for coming on. You actually were fighting against the death penalty in the state of California. Can you tell us just a little bit about that process for you?
Yes, I was on the campaign to end the death penalty with the ACLU, and it wasn't because they wanted to hire me to be the face or not because of my story. They thought we had a good chance of winning. It's because I really do not believe another person has the right to take another person's life. As a child, I was against the death penalty. It doesn't make sense to me. The dead cannot feel anything. But the pain that the families feel is not even there are no words. It's indescribable. And also, people that are in jail now are asking to be placed on death row because most likely they're going to die before going to the gas chambers. They get so many rights that the people who have life without the possibility of parole, they have television, they go back and forth to court. They have visitation rights. So actually the death penalty, being on death row, is not so bad for some compared to those who are spending parole. And it's very, very expensive. And that coupled with my own spiritual belief that an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, revenge is not justice, is the one of the reasons that I stood strong against the death penalty.
I agree with you. I'm in law school myself. I'm on my way to law school, but my undergrad is in law philosophy, and we had that argument all the time about the death penalty. And I'm always an advocate for, a dead person can't be punished. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Only person who
Absolutely.
You're really punishing is going to be their family, their kids, their wife, their mother, or whatever the case may be. Accompanied with, how my grandmother felt about the death penalty. I'm like, a person should be made to serve their time and have their punishment,
right.
Have your punishment, And it is a hard decision.
I think
I think it would be even more effective if they were to pay restitution to the family.
I think John F. Kennedy said, because he was against the death penalty too, and I believe he said it's not right to kill people to prove the point that killing is wrong.
It's sending a message that it's okay to kill, and how can you be an example by doing something you're saying that people should not do? It's just the wrong message.
Mm-hmm.
Lorraine, I have a question. Did you live in the Oakland area all your life, in or around the Bay Area?
Well, I lived in the Bay Area. I never lived in the city of Oakland. But the work that we do is primarily in the city of Oakland. My sons, after they became adults and were in college and working, moved to Oakland because it's more reasonable to live in Oakland, but I never lived in Oakland. I have been in the Bay Area since 1975. I graduated from high school. I'm from Mississippi, from a little one-horse town. At age 17, I graduated and headed for the San Francisco Bay.
Okay.
I've been in the Bay Area a long time.
Okay. Like I was telling Chantel, it's always hard to do these type of interviews because of the subject matter involved, especially it being so personal. But I just want to ask you, knowing the Bay Area, being familiar with how it is, the violence that is out there, because in the beginning, when you first came in, you said, I never thought, and I'm not saying that any parent should think that any violence would ever happen to their son, but knowing the violence, did you ever think that to try to get them out of there or try to talk them out of moving out of there? Out of Oakland, out of that area?
And see, that was part of my guilt and part of my pain is because I never I didn't pay attention to the violence. We lived in Alameda, which is...
I know where that is.
No, there is no violence in Alameda. And it was, it's just kind of like people do today. They are not involved. It doesn't impact them, and you're just not concerned. And that's a terrible place to be. Our focus at the time was on teaching African American history and doing a little local television show in the city of Alameda to teach my boys how to be successful. I really didn't think about it. I'm so sorry that I did not talk to my boys and to let them know that people, for the most part, in the city of Oakland don't discuss, they don't debate. I taught them how to debate as children. We would have our meetings every Friday after work and talk about subjects and start debates. And I think what happened, Obadiah at the Barber College, my younger twin, had what he would probably call a debate with someone at the college. And according to Ursie Joyner, who was the investigator on the case, it was that they called an argument that led to the murder. So my son, Khan, wouldn't start, and he called his twin brother, who was on his lunch break. It was in the evening, but he worked two jobs, and he was headed for his job at UPS, taking a break, and that's how they were together. Obadiah, according to Ursie Joyner, had an argument with the guy at the Barber College, and that's what they think led to the murder. Now, recently, I requested that the case be reopened. They don't call them cold cases except they don't have any more information, but I asked them to reopen the case, and they have reopened my grandson's cases to find out what really happened, because I saw if it was indeed an argument. I'm not an investigator. I could go to the college and find out who the argument was with and do something to try and solve the case. The cases, their cases remain unsolved. And, yes, I tell people all the time, don't do what I did. Don't kick back and pretend it's not happening. And just because your children are not part of a gang or they are not involved in drugs, and it could happen to anybody. You need to study your environment and know where you are, and if it's not safe, get out of there.
But I'm glad you said that. I am glad that you said that. And you're speaking from a great place of experience, and especially now in this day and age, because these parents have really got back. When I say parents, I'm talking about myself too. Like, we really got back into this kickback era. Like, parents don't even realize that Google, for the most part, be raising their kids, these devices, these smartphones. Parents have to start getting back around the dinner table again and sitting around and having meetings and really talking to their kids, finding out what's going on. You do not want your kid feeling more comfortable talking with the people outside your house than you. Like, it's just, it's crazy. The world is very topsy-turvy, you know. And
absolutely.
Parents,
we gotta
definitely
start
need to
talking
be paying
again.
Attention.
That's right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Communication needs to be beyond a keyboard, because, you know, the keyboard thing is making people way too sensitive anyway, because you can't really tell what nobody's saying to you on that level. So you need to be looking at someone's face again. You need to be hearing their voice as they're saying it. We need to be talking. We need to really start communicating again, so that way when someone is in a reasonable debate, because what it sounds like, Lorraine, is that you taught your sons the lifestyle of reason, like how to reason within the world to move through and motivate and get through the world through reasonable means. And through reason, you can't, debate is reasonable. They teach debating in school. That's a reasonable mannerism. So through a debate, it's a very big difference through debate and argument. So when you can't reach a person on an intelligent level for them to understand that, hey, I'm not arguing with you and I'm not dissing you. I feel strongly about my point. You feel strongly about yours, and we're both exiting here, but we're going to leave here with our lives, with our livelihood.
Right.
No one's livelihood is going to be threatened. You know,
yeah, you know what?
Communication.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Oh, go ahead, Mr. Wright. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You had a point.
Oh, no, I was just thinking it's so sad that they don't want to talk anymore. They want to get the gun and shoot you. That's so sad.
Mm-hmm. It is, and we talked, me and my girlfriend, the other day, we were talking about how in our day, you could play the dozens, you know, you could say things and laugh and joke, and everybody can go home intact. Like, oh, wait till I come back tomorrow. I'm going to think of an even better joke. You know, you could actually interact with your friends in a way that was fun, and it went on for years. You know, those things like telling stories and having those little debates and conversations and stuff was natural behavior in our day, especially
right.
with our parents coming up out of the Black Panther era and the Black Power era, where people were sitting around having intellectual conversation, you know,
mm-hmm.
and debate. And now it's like, people are so sensitive, and I think, like Aaron was saying, this social media has really made people sensitive, because it's like you don't really know what they're saying. You see the keys banging, but you're not quite sure what they mean, and then everybody's so ultra-sensitive.
It's worse than TV. I turn my TV off at the beginning of the year because the work that I do, even though it's not grievous, it can be very stressful. And what you're receiving over the Internet and over TV, you have no control over the subliminal stuff that's coming out at you and that's getting into your spirit. And these things do impact your life. They really
mm-hmm.
do adversely
mm-hmm.
impact your life. And our
mm-hmm.
generation was different. We were more a conversationalist, but the apple that hardly ever falls far from the tree. And I told someone, I interviewed on the Magic Johnson Television Network, Aspire, a couple of months ago, which is going to air on May 14th. The show is called Exhale, and they asked me a question about where do you think this is all coming from? And I told them the apple hardly ever falls far from the tree. But you can have an apple tree in an environment that may produce apples, but they may not be very healthy. Some apples are going to have a little rotten spot in there, but you can cut that rotten spot out. If you can get that person into some therapy, you can still make some great jam out of the apple. You can still
mm-hmm.
turn out to be a great person. That
mm-hmm.
the apple hardly ever fall far from the tree. And so the one lady in the support group said today it should start at home. But it depends on what kind of tree every home
mm-hmm.
is not a healthy
mm-hmm.
home, and these
mm-hmm.
kids are smoking weed and marijuana, however you want to call it, and it's impacting their brain.
Mm-hmm.
And they have
mm-hmm.
no reasoning.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and they're mixing it. They're mixing so many chemicals, and these things are becoming the babysitters and the teachers
mm-hmm.
Of the youth. And for a lot of parents, they're also becoming numb. They're using it to become numb to the situation and their circumstances and different things that they're going through. And then it's hard to say, okay, well, you don't do that, but then they see you doing that. So they
mm-hmm.
do that.
Yeah.
So,
if it's in your environment,
mm-hmm.
they think it's
mm-hmm.
all right, but it's not all right. It really isn't
mm-hmm.
okay. I think that God believes here for the healing of the nation. And if you need
mm-hmm.
marijuana for medicinal purposes, that's one thing. But if you're using it just to get high and to escape reality, it's not doing
mm-hmm.
you any good. It's just, it's not going to help you.
Right, exactly.
And it's not just the drugs either. I'm going to tell you something else. It's the images. Like, let me give you perfect
mm-hmm.
examples of what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They'll take these kids and they'll sell us these kids. Let's say Justin Bieber, Miley Cyrus. Let's just use them two for an example, right?
Mm-hmm.
Quick, they'll sell us these kids, cute, cuddly, happy. That's what they give us at first, but now
right.
the generation of flip, right? And we are in a very, very rebellious tone from the youth. Like, this is the first time the youth has been this out of control, not even in the 60s when people with this
right.
love and peace thing, where they were calling that rebellion on the part of, like, the younger generation, was it like this. This generation is crazy. Now you look at Justin Bieber, every time you turn around, he's getting busted with some drugs, he's running with the wrong guys, He want to be in every rap video. He's a singer. You know, Miley Cyrus, is just, she's showing off everything. Like, look, daddy's little girl is screwing. Like, there's no more cute, there's no more wholesome pie. Blue-eyed blonde girl, we out here doing this. We on tables, popping Cristal. My crotch is out. I might be having sex. I might be doing, and it makes it, and see, when that happens, the youth is looking at this, and they're saying, yes, I can say, hey, no. It's like that song, like, Pink Floyd had a song back in the days like that. We don't need no education. But they were just talking about raging against the wall and all that.
Need no education.
Yeah, that's the era that we are really in right now. And like, you know, y'all was saying before, it's all for us, the parents now, because we were the kids who were out of hand that were passing these traits on to these children now. We weren't minding them like we were being minded and looking like, I really didn't see them start getting in trouble till I got in my late teens. Because somebody was always minding me up to that point.
Right.
There was always someone there. And I was mindful of that. Like, I knew I had to go do my thing away. And I mean far away, because it wasn't anybody in the immediate vicinity that was older than me had the right to discipline me. That's the era I came up in.
Yes, me too.
That doesn't
exist
anymore. You say some of these kids now, they might pull out on you.
Yes.
I
know
you just never know.
Yeah.
No regret. Aaron, Lisa has a quick question, and then we're going to bring Charnel back into the conversation so we can start talking about the healing and those processes that have to happen for the mother. Go ahead, Leisha.
Okay. I actually have two questions. I think Tony had a question too. But now, Miss Lorraine, I have a son now, and and maybe Charnel can actually chime in on this as well. Like, we live in a city a lot like Alameda, outside of the city of Detroit. And when it comes down to, like, discussing the things, because we actually have to have those racial conversations. We have to have not only just sexual conversations, because it just seems like kids are under attack right now. You have teachers giving kids lap dances. You got teachers sleeping with, you know, the kids. You know, they're giving them alcohol. You got parents giving kids alcohol. You got kids killing parents because they can't go out. You know, they're taking all these drugs over and beyond just weed. You know, those crystal things that, like, they sell in the store that are supposed to be, like, for the incense and things of that nature. Do you, because you do still have Greg and Charnel still has an older son, did you find it hard to kind of get them to understand when you have to step out into that area to let them know, like, this is what the world is type conversation?
You know, I think I was a pretty good mother. People tell me that I was a pretty good mother, but I don't think I was a good enough mother, because I did not talk to my kids about that, because no one talked to me about it, in part because we never experienced that in our home, no smoking, drinking, and things like that. I wish I had that conversation, because you never know what kids are going through emotionally. And I know we're going to talk about the healing part in a few minutes, but when my oldest twin, Albedee, went to school in Alameda in kindergarten, 5 years old, he came home, looked in the mirror, and started crying. What's the matter, baby? I'm black.
I said,
he knew he was black, right? I said, yes, you're black and you're handsome and you're an artist, but I want to be white. But why do you want to be white? The white kids get treated better and they get to get their snacks first. So we don't know Well, I went to the school, and I broke a few verbs and told the teachers, I said to myself, them is my babies, you know, discriminate against my babies. And that's why I started the television show, was to try and help raise their self-esteem and teach them something beyond what they were seeing on TV, teach them how to produce shows. So our kids are exposed to racism in school. They're exposed to what other kids have been exposed to, the peer pressure. We don't know what they are going through, so it is really important that parents don't kick back and be complacent, thinking that the kids are going to be, we do have to talk to them about those things. And I did not. And after I lost my twin sons, part of my nervous breakdown was getting every African-American out of Oakland that I could, all of my son's friends. We gathered them up. I sent Gregory to Texas Southern University through a program called You Can Too, got all of his friends out of here. But I didn't tell them anything about when you get to college, what to do. My whole thing was get out of Oakland to save your life. And so I do. If I had to turn back the hands of time, I would be a better mother.
And you know what? This is Nene. I'm going to go as far as to say that you're not a bad mom, and you weren't a bad mom because, like we talked about before, it's hard to say, let me prepare my child for sudden death. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's nothing that you could have did any differently. I believe you were loving them. And what a lot of, you know, of our black children are missing is a loving, peaceful home and environment, which you were creating for them. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes we might smother a little bit, but I believe that in all of your efforts, what you were doing was giving them the best of yourself, you know, giving them the best that you had, and that was educating them on how to be strong and black and educated black men who would move forward, you know, to do great things. And I think that is where you were going with it. Those types of conversations,
yes,
you think to yourself, like, why should you have to tell them? Like we say with having to tell your child, well, now if you get pulled over, you know, do this, do that. It's like you have to give them a whole soliloquy before they leave the house so that they don't get shot or killed by a police officer, you know. So it's like the conversation now has really moved, you know, from when you just had to make sure that they can read well and write well and speak well and stand up proper and tie your shoes and tuck your shirt in. You know, those are the things that we were taught to make you be able to survive, you know, in the world.
That's right.
So I don't think you should ever.
I really did my best to create a home where they could be, they have great self-esteem, be prepared to go to college, and my boys wanted to have their own businesses and everything, and that was our focus. I've never had any experience in the world myself. I grew up in a sanctified family, came from Mississippi, went straight to the church, never really went out into the world, just sang in a band for a short time, and when they smoked, I smelled the smoke, I quit the band. So I didn't know what was going on out there. I didn't know what to teach them. And after 13 years of a rocky marriage, I became a single parent. And it takes all of you, everything in you, to keep your children in a safe environment and to provide food and shelter. I have to say that I did the best that I could, but if anyone is listening today, go beyond that. Find out what's going on out there in the world. My son Gregory still says that I'm still green. Mom, you're still very green.
And green is a good thing. It ain't bad being green, because nowadays, Lord have mercy. All these people are purple.
Mom, you still green like you were when you were in Mississippi. So, in the country.
There's no real way to prepare for anything that really is going to come about in their personal path. You know, myself, I was the opposite. I grew up in the hood. I was in the projects. I ran with the gangs. I was in the street really, really hard. But once I had my daughter, I was like, I got to get out. Like, I had her. I had her in New Jersey. It was terrible. The gang initiation that year I had her was to kill a mother and her child. That was the gang initiation in New Jersey. Yeah, so we were, like, very nervous. You know, I'm like, oh, the World Trade Center had just fell. My daughter was 2 months old. I'm like, what kind of world did I just bring a child into? That had happened. And then the gang initiation was going on in North New Jersey. They were actually shooting mothers and children on their porches and doing a lot of different crazy things. I was like, okay, I got to get out. So I moved to the mountains of Pennsylvania to try to get a stable, nice area, you know, for her to grow in. And I think I did the opposite that you did. I didn't tell her anything about the hood or anything. I didn't discuss it with her. We didn't talk about it. I'm very, very fair-skinned. So for a long time, she actually thought I was white. So when she was like 4 years old, because she went to an all-white school, and everybody she went to school with looked like me. So we in the car driving, right, and we're talking about color and stuff, and she said, well, Mommy, you're white. I said, no, I'm not. She said, yes, you are. I mean, we had a literal back-and-forth argument. And then I finally brought her back down to the common area. Let me get this girl back around some of her room so she can see what's going on. And she was looking out the window, and she was like, where are we? And I was like, where is such a... I said, Mommy grew up around here. She said, you grew up in the ghetto. I mean, she was so appalled. Like, will you get me out of here, woman? You know, I'm like, this is ridiculous. So it's like, you don't know which way to really go. You're like, you try to protect them. You protect them too much. I'm like, my daughter told me that about a year ago, she couldn't count change because I would give her a credit card to go to the store. So she was like, Mom, I have a hard time counting change. I'm like, why? But I don't send her nowhere by herself because I'm so afraid, you know, from what I grew up and, you know, everything that's going on. So it's like, you don't really know what, you know, you're going to produce. You know what I'm saying? So it happens, but you're doing the best that you can. You know, you're trying to do the best that you can with what you have. You know what I'm saying? Because all you have is what you have. Yes. And that's all you can do.
I'm so proud of you. So proud of you getting out of the gang for the sake of your baby.
Yes,
I only learned about the gangs when I went to a court to support one of our mothers in the support group whose son was the victim of gang violence. And I hear about it a lot now, but I just don't understand. I really don't. I wish I could save the world, and I think that the United States government should do better. I believe if we can send a man to the moon, we should be able to save lives here on Earth, and if we can go to other countries to help them with peace, we should come to Oakland and
make
help with
peace.
This war that's going on. It's the state of It's really a crisis going on.
Yes, you said a mouthful.
State of emergency.
A war. A war. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It is a war on our streets. It is a war on our children. And we're losing at a rapid pace. We are losing at a rapid, rapid pace.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Tony.
First, I want to piggyback on something that Aaron had said earlier about the family and the sitting down around the table and having dinner. That's actually something that we do, and sometimes my kids' family friends come over. You know, we have family game night, movie night, and it's like a new animal for them. You know, they're so shocked that people actually do these things, and they actually bring that conversation into her school, into her high school. How, you know Natalia, her mom, they all sit down, they go to basketball games, they have dinner together. You know, I want to be in your family, and that's just so sad to hear her classmates speak like that. You know, so that is true, and it's really lacking, and I think that's like an avenue that should be reopened. But I do have a question for Ms. Lorraine. You know, with your organization, 1,000 Mothers to Prevent Violence, can you tell me what type of services, you know, that organization provides?
Yes, well, as you know, I founded 1,000 Mothers to Prevent Violence after losing my son. 8 years later, we became a 501c3 nonprofit organization. But prior to that, in 2006, while I was lying behind the four walls dealing with a depressive disorder, I could sense the Holy Spirit saying to me, Lorraine, get up. You can either lie here and die here or get up and live. What do you want to do? And I said, Lord, I want to live. And he said, you're not the only one. Go out and help out the other mothers who are suffering in silence out there. So I started knocking on doors and taking food to the families, and they let me in when I told them I lost my twins. And many of them had heard about it because it was top of the news story. Very seldom you hear of twins leaving this world at the same time. Mm-hmm. And they let me in. I started bringing them food and counseling with them with my background in social work and finding out what their needs were. And that's how we got started out there in the community. The San Francisco Chronicle followed me for 4 months. The word got out, and people needed help with advocacy. They needed help filling out their paperwork for victim services. They needed someone to be that voice at the district attorney's office with the police department, and they would call me. And that's how we started developing certain programs like CULT, a support group. We meet every Saturday in Oakland, where families of homicide victims and friends can come together. It's a safe place for us to talk it out, cry it out, scream it out. And often we'll have guests. Today we had Sergeant Bosser from the Oakland Police Department and Officer Baker there to hear our concerns. And we have concerns that our children's cases, our loved ones' cases are just sitting there. No one is solving these cases, for example. The CULT support group is that avenue, is that place where we can come and talk about how grief is impacting us. And then we advocate for our families based on their need. We'll be writing a letter to Governor Brown to help this young man who was shot along with his sister with kids in the car, who wants to get out of town, who wants his life to be fair, but the state of California won't give them money to get out of town. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So we advocate for our families. We do a walk every year called the Morning Mother's Walk to Prevent Violence, and that was born out of, after going back, trying to go back to work in 2008, I wasn't able to hold down my job at the VA trying to do mental health. It goes, my doctor said, you can't do mental health, Ms. Taylor. He told me, for every reason except you're still a basket case yourself when it comes to grief. And mm-hmm. so he insisted I took antidepressants. I took them for a while. I asked the Lord to help me to experience the joy that I was experiencing on antidepressants, even though it was false. I was still mm-hmm. hearing bells and thunder roaring. And I said, Lord, help me to feel happy again without this medication. So I started walking around the San Leandro Marina, and I got some other mothers to walk with me. We started the Morning Mother's Walk, and we're coming up to our fifth annual on May 10th, the Morning Mother's Walk to Prevent Violence. We do a purple gala. We make home mm-hmm. visits. There are families who cannot come to the support group, but we go visit them. So those are just a few of the programs, our major programs. Well, we are there to help people whatever they need to do. Sometimes they need their houses cleaned or dishes washed, or need us to go to court with them, support them during a trial. So when people mm-hmm. ask me, what is your title? My title is Helper. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Just the Helper.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's powerful. Charnel, you're still yes. on the line. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to take a minute to make sure that Charnel and Lorraine are introduced to each other. Charnel, she lost her son, Lorraine, to illness, not to your type of situation. However, she is an advocate as well in her city and moving towards, you know, doing different things. Charnel, do you have anything for her, anything that, you know, you can help her with, or vice versa? We definitely would like to put you two together. Do you have anything, Charnel, that you would like to add or anything like that?
Well, I was listening to her story, and I'm just want to say I just feel you. I'm just so sorry. You know, see, you had like two boys at the same time, so I know that was double tragedy. You know, taken away from you, and I just want to just give out. I just feel bad because you just had two. Even though, you know, I had one, a child death is a child death, but you had two at one time, and I know that was real hard for you. And I'm just so sorry to hear, you know, your child got taken by violence. And that is a big tragedy because our young black brothers killing our young black brothers. It's just black on black crime. And they used to say it was the cops killing them. It's not the cops no more.
Mm-hmm.
It's the black.
Yeah.
It's the black on black crime now.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry for your loss too. And I tell people all the time, even though I lost my twins at the same time, we don't minimize another mother's pain. Pain is pain.
Right.
And I'm really sorry for your loss.
Me too.
Mm-hmm. Now, Lorraine, within your organization, do they have any type of services or counseling or any type of organizations that are geared towards Charnell's fight and what she's trying to have with her triumph from the loss of her son?
Well, our group is open. It's a great support group while our focus is on homicide victims, families, and friends. That is our focus. We are open to anyone that need us. We are there. We provide referrals to one-on-one counseling, and sometimes we'll bring the counselor or therapist to the group, but we basically provide the free support groups, and in that group, we find out what our families need, and we try and point them in that direction.
Okay. All right. That's a blessing. That's a really good thing, and it's strengthening. I would encourage definitely, Charnell, please go and, friend her and make sure you guys can stay in contact, because I know you're trying to get your 501(c)(3) going, and
right.
She has been successful in getting everything going that she has going. So I think you ladies would definitely be a strength for each other. So that I'm
absolutely
glad that we were able to have this show.
Right.
Yeah. Mhm. That's awesome. This is the healing process. Moving from the tragedy to the triumph. If you can give us a little on that, Lorraine, then we'll also get a little on that from Charnell as well before we get ready to close the show out. How were you able to empower? You said you went through everything, the nervous breakdowns and everything that you went through to get there. What was that moment that you were able to grab it by the reins and say, okay, I'm going to go forward from this moment on and be able to celebrate their lives and help others?
Yes, well, it was my faith in God. It is my faith in God that keeps me going. When I first conceived, the Holy Spirit told me that I was going to give birth to twins. Do not have an abortion. They are going to be a great blessing. And I wonder why God talked to me about the abortion, having been brought up in the sanctified church. You just don't think about things like that. At the time, I was engaged to be married, and at the same time going to school, there was a counselor at City College in San Francisco who tried to talk me into having an abortion. Now, the doctor told me I was having triplets up until the date that I was on there trying to give birth to those babies. Like, doctor,
wow,
I can't do another one. I'm not used to this. You're going to have to take the next one. And he said to me, you can relax now. And I asked, well, what about my other baby? He said, I only found two in there. Then only two, and that reminded me what the Holy Spirit said, that they were twins. Now, if I had had triplets, and I could have questioned God, but when he said they were going to be a great blessing, that I hold on to that because I know that God cannot lie, and I never thought that the blessing would come through their dying. And that's what keeps me going, knowing that somebody is going to be blessed. Some people say from all over the country say that they are being blessed one way or the other. So getting up out of my bed, listening to God, to go out and do this work, the more I help people, the more I find my own healing.
That's powerful. That's powerful. That is powerful.
I got a question about that. I mean, just on in the sense of the biblical sense, like, do you liken that to, like, sacrifice? Like, you know, like, for instance, with Isaac and his son, not that he did actually have to go through with it, but just the thought of to come into something else, another realization, another light in faith of God.
Yes. Well, it's by my faith that I have no wisdom of my own. It used to be my mom's religion. I accepted Christ on my own as my own personal Savior. And it's just my faith in God that I know His voice And he told me that I was going to have twins. Now, twins don't run in my family, and I never had children before. These were my first, and it was just confirmation. I thought that the blessing was that my boys were grown now and they were in college and working. My guards were completely down. Never would I have ever thought that them dying at the same time, such a tragic death, would bring about a blessing. I never really thought about that. I can't. It's still beyond my comprehension. I have that little faith that I hold on to, and it keeps me going.
Well, that's a blessing. That's a blessing that you have that that foundation to hold on to, because you know a lot of people don't get the opportunity to recover or to have, you know, that strong relationship with the Lord to pull themselves through, and it's a blessing that you're able to now, you know, go out and share with other mothers and help them to also get their strength and their voice. Charnel, for yourself, what was the moment that you knew, okay, now I need to go forward and embrace this and help other mothers?
Okay, the moment was for me. I just want everybody to know every year we have my son memorial at the Branchville Park Playground in August. So everywhere we celebrate. We don't celebrate his death. We celebrate his homecoming. So we celebrate on Branchville Park in North New Jersey every August. So my first time, the first 2006, I think it was, we celebrate, and I had to get on stage and talk. And I'm not a talker. I don't like talking in front of people. So I was nervous. And then I was like, it seemed like my son was there, like, giving me strength. Even though he passed away, he was, like, there giving me strength, pulling the story out of me to tell people his story. And that was before my book was completed. And I was on stage, and I was getting choked. And it just seemed like something just hit me in my back, and I just let it out. And for that moment, I don't know what it was, and I always say it was my son, because he wanted me to tell the story, tell his story and let people know that I can help others. That at first I thought I was going to it. I thought I was by myself, and I was alone, but you're never alone. You know, but at that time I thought I was alone, and what helped me was, and what keep on helping me and giving me the strength, God is giving me the strength, first of all, but for us to keep having his yearly memorial, that's what in the book, you know, pulled me through. That was a therapist for me, right in the book, and telling my son's story. Now, the doctor did want to put me on medicine. The doctor did want me to, I never been to a counseling. I never went to the support group. She wanted me to go, and I was like, no. She wanted to give me medicine, but I'm not the type to take I don't even like taking Tylenol. So I turned medicine down, and I just let it. I had nervous problems. I mean, my head was thumping. Like, I had, like, I could feel my heart beeping. That's how bad my nerves was. When she was trying to give me medicine, I wouldn't take the medicine because I thought I could handle it. I did handle it by myself. God was in my corner, and I handled it. Until this day, I thank God. I praise God. Without God, I wouldn't have been through. I wouldn't have been as long as I was.
Now, Miss Lorraine, I have a question for you. Have you ever thought about writing a book?
Yes, I've had dreams about it. I know that I need to. I've written a lot of notes because that was how I dealt with it. Also, just keep writing in my journal, but I had to use my pen to write, not my computer, so I have to transfer all of that to something electronic where everyone can read it. I do want to write a book. It feels like it would be easier if I could find a ghostwriter, someone to help me to go and relive that again. I've had a block. I had a block, but I need to get past that.
You have two authors on the phone.
Yes, I mean,
very good pen. Two very good authors.
Me.
I heard someone say ghost, and I just popped up.
Yes, help me write it. I really do. God has given me the title, which I won't put out there in my dream, and I have to prophets in my dream to anoint me. I know that I have to write a book, and it seems like I get so busy working with my families, it's, unfortunately, I never know what my next day is going to be like. I may get an email from the Oakland Police Department, we had a murder last night, would you please be on standby to visit this family? And once I visit the family, I may follow the family throughout the funeral and on, because once I go to the families, we find out that sometimes there's a substance use disorder, there's illiteracy, there's poverty, and you can't go in there and just think about getting them through the funeral. You can't just leave them like that. And my work just continues, and it's just normal for a social worker to put other people first. That's just normal.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I haven't really gotten to working on the book yet, seriously, but I want to. I want to.
Let me say something to Jarnell. This is Jarnell. Can I say something to you, Lorraine? You have, like, if your heart telling you to do it, go for it. Sometimes you got to do you and just put everything. I know you want to help others, but if that book important and God sending you a message and he already gave you the title, what are you waiting for? Mm-hmm. You got to go for it.
That's right.
Go for it.
Okay. And at the same time, you are still helping others. You're helping others
right.
beyond the city of Oakland. You're extending over to the UK or Japan or, you know, just mothers mm-hmm. everywhere who may be grieving and they don't know how to deal with their grief. They may not have a mother organization like you have for the city of Oakland. Their city may not have one.
Mm-hmm.
So your book is still going to be a blessing, and you're
right.
still going to be getting your movement out across the nation, possibly across the world,
mm-hmm.
and that's still going to help others. You're still going to be able to do all the things that you wanted to accomplish. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I need to hear that. I really do. I've been asked so many times, where is your book? And I just started cleaning out my closet, my garage, and looking at a whole files of papers where I've written. I just kept notes. And my son, Alba D., was an artist. He has
yes,
so much
he
artwork.
Was.
We took our logo from a piece of his artwork, and they wrote raps And it's just so much to put in a book. I have books actually already written. It's just a matter of organizing and finding the right person to help me together. The motivation
I
need. The motivation.
I think you have made it. Yeah, I think you have ran into the motivation that you need. And we're going to have to, everybody's going to have to exchange. This is a whole networking situation because I think that we're all going to be able to help each other with the healing process. I'm a part of an organization called Parents of Murdered Children, and they fought all the way to Congress for the National Day of Mourning, which is on September 27th, and we usually come together for the candle lighting ceremony in Pennsylvania. But I was telling them earlier, one of the therapeutic projects that I worked on in college for the organization was My Final Words. And each parent had to write the final thing that they wanted to say to their child, and we had it put in a big plaque with the child's picture and the dove
mm-hmm.
carrying the message to the child, and it was very therapeutic for them.
Wow.
So it was an awesome ceremony, and it was powerful. It was powerful, and I think that having this, be able to put it into words and you able to share this, I think that it's going to do double the good that you guys are already doing. And I think that we definitely need to connect when the show is over and see if we can even put a plan into action between Aaron and I think we could really help you out a lot with getting that into motion.
Oh, my God.
And, yeah, getting your voice out here.
Oh, what a blessing!
Yes, I'll take that very personal. I'm a big advocate for that, and I work for the DA's office and victims, so I definitely know you know what you go through, and you know explaining things to the parents, and you know being with them and everything like that. So I think that we could walk this journey together and really put out a good piece of work that will help and will heal.
Well, I am
absolutely.
So excited. I'm open and I'm ready. I'm ready.
Absolutely.
That's
and
my heart's desire.
I actually grew up with the twins. And, you know, and she told me that she had Alvity's pictures. And, yes, he used to draw all the time. All the time he used to draw. So I think this is going to be awesome, Miss Lorraine. I think this is going to just take your movement just to the next level. You know, everything happens for a reason. God puts us in certain places for certain things, for certain purposes. And I just see that, you know, your vision is going to go farther than what you've seen it go so far. And I'm just so happy for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Well, I'm going to be right here on the line so we can get it together. I found a lot of work that I've been writing, and I'm ready. I really am.
Well, that's a great thing. And what we'll do is we'll set up a good conference call meeting, and we'll all get together. We'll inbox and share the information. And with Charnel already have written her memoirs and things, will definitely get, you know, some of her input and advice so she can at least show us the groundwork that she went through for her healing process and writing her book on her son's behalf. So I think that we'll be able to do some phenomenal things and continue forward. And we would like to spread you both of your words way past where you're at in your towns and states. You know, we're on the East Coast, and you guys are on the other side. I think we can do some things and bring them right up to the middle.
Right.
Amen.
Right. Right into the middle.
Oh, yes.
Great thing.
Yep, that's great. And we thank both of you for coming and sharing your spirit with us. We know that it's not easy to, you know, have to relive those moments and go through, you know, those conversations. But we're happy that you were able to find strength in your tragedies and be able to also strengthen others so that they can find their strength and their voice. And I appreciate you accepting, you know, coming out to the show and sharing those things with us. And I just pray that we all can move, you know, forward in the healing and helping others. I think it's going to be really, really great.
Right. Yeah,
yes, so thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, this is awesome.
We actually have a hand up, Nene.
Okay, well, take that 570, and then how many hands do we have? Okay, go ahead, take that 570. Get her in here before we leave the lines.
570-540, you are live with the Brighton Royalty Crew. Good evening. Who are we speaking with?
Yes, Keisha. Hello.
Hi,
hello.
Keisha.
Hey, Keisha.
How you doing, Keisha?
I love the topic, and my condolences to the mothers. I'm so glad y'all had the show. I learned a lot. I have sons. I never lost a child, but I lost my little brother. And to hear them be able to go through that and come out, you know, with a positive outlook is a good thing, because when I lost my brother, that's the first time I ever questioned God. I lost other people. I was really depressed. And he got killed in Irvington along with a pregnant woman. He was murdered 2 hours before his birthday, for his 25th birthday. And I had just spoken to him, brushed him off the telephone. I'm like, I'm going to call you back. I'm tired. And the last words he said to me was that he loved me. When I say I go through it every day, it's better. But the questions and knowing the person that killed him is walking these streets. I have moments where I want to get in my car. And do things that I don't want to do. But I also know he has a mother, this person. And I wouldn't want that on anybody. I watched my brother and mother go through a lot, as well as the rest of his brothers and sisters, and now my nieces who don't have a father. So it's, and then I know people who lost their whole family to the street. I know a young lady, her brothers died. Within 2.5 years, she lost 3 of her brothers and her mother. My life changed, and that's in Newark. So this topic is neat, because a lot of people, it's a generation missing. We are definitely going to lose a whole generation. They're killing each other. Everybody else killing them, and they're killing themselves. And we're going to need people like the two mothers that let these boys see that, you know. Y'all call these gang members y'all brothers, but at the end of the day, it's your mother. That's who you got in your back. At the end of the day, that's who it is. Them boys is not going to come. My brother, They're not going to come. When my brother passed away, the church was full. We had cameras. They tried to put the blue scarf in his casket, but where they at now with his mother in that room crying by herself?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And a lot of his friends that was there, they going too. So they definitely need mothers. And these boys, I hope they look at it. And our girls. We're losing our girls too to see that mm-hmm. this game stuff is not, it's not a game.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
right.
You got your mother picking up pieces and stuff and questioning her motherhood. And it's not, you can raise the babies the best as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And with the best intention, it's people out there. It's just, it's like the, like I had the show before, the hunt is on. It really
mm-hmm.
is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's telling
I'm so sorry for your loss. So sorry.
Wow.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that with us, Keisha. And we pray that you continue to heal and grow, you know, within your tragedy, and you get, you know, the triumph you need to help other mothers or sisters or, you know, wives or aunts, you know, who are going through the same thing. But we definitely thank you for sharing that with us and calling in and speaking to our mom.
Uh-huh. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes, have a good evening, Keisha.
Absolutely, right. Keisha.
Thanks, Keisha, for calling.
Yeah, you see, it's big. It's way bigger than us, you know. It's like
uh-huh.
we could just do a small fraction of anything to help. That would be great because it's way bigger than us, and it's a continuous situation. And if we don't have these conversations and talk and network and see how we can help each other all around the globe, you know, nothing will get done
uh-huh.
because it's one thing, you know, to keep talking about it, but then to – you have to do something after that, you know.
That's
you have
right.
to talk, but then
that's
you have
right.
to do. Yes.
That's
yes.
right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, and this has been a powerful, powerful show, and we are so happy that you were able to join us. We're going to continue to play this show. We want to continue to also promote the different events that you have coming. So, Ms. Lorraine, if you can please tell us the events that you have coming up for our listeners who may be out in California, we can make sure that they can support, and then we'll get Charnell's on the East Coast so that they can come out and support her as well.
Yes. Oh, our Morning Mothers Walk to Prevent Violence will be on May 10th at the San Leandro Marina Park in San Leandro. We'll have registration beginning at 8:30. We'll have our walk at 10, and after that we'll have a short program at 11 o'clock. We have Martin Cantu and his L.A. band will be there. Mm-hmm. We'll have Hawaiian Christian praise dancers. KMEL 106.7 will be there with their radio station. ABC
mm-hmm.
7 is another sponsor. We're only asking $20 per walker, and that would include
mm-hmm.
your T-shirt if you're pre-registered and a nice
mm-hmm.
lunch. And it's May 10th at the San Leandro Marina. For more information, you can visit our website at 1000mothers.org, and that's 1000mothers, MOTHERS.org.
Very good. And, Leisha, if you could do me a favor, when we're offline, can you please get all of that information from Lorraine? We need to make a flyer for that so that we can push that through our book clubs and
mm-hmm.
also in Charnell's organization, because she has a lot of moms in there, and some of them may be in the California area and want to come out and support. So we want to push this all the way up until the 10th of May so that we can get, you know, some moms
okay.
connected with some other moms. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Charnell, do you have
yes,
something coming up?
Yes, well, in August, we gave City Hall in Newark 2 dates because every year we got to get them 2 dates to see which date they have available for us to have my son
mm-hmm.
event memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't got back in touch with us, but we gave them August the 16th and August the 23rd. So whichever
okay.
day they give us, that's the day. But we always have it every yearly in Bransfield Park in Newark, New Jersey.
Okay. And, Leisha, again, can you please stay in contact with Charnell to get her dates as well? So, again,
yes,
we can let them know so they can come out and support and also get some support from other moms who are trying to get their strength. And that would be really, really good for me. I appreciate that.
Thank
and we
you.
Thank both of you ladies again. We're going to go ahead and let you go. We're going to get in contact with everybody. We have everybody's contact information. So over this next week, I think we should be able to tie something down to be able to talk to one another, and so we can get together and share this information and see how we can help going forward.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Oh, looking forward. Looking forward. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing your time.
Absolutely.
Yes, and please enjoy the rest of your weekend. And we're always here. You can hit us anytime, anytime. If you need anything, if you have special events or anything coming up, please let us know so we can blog about them and post about them so we can get, you know, mothers connected to help with this healing process.
Thank you so much. Wow.
Thank you.
All right. Blessings.
Yes, blessings to you. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
Y'all too.
Thank you.
Thank
you for coming out.
Thanks.
Yes.
Thank you.
And good night.
Good night.
Awesome show.
Yes, that was powerful. That was really, really powerful. And I am happy that they came on and shared this information with us. Aaron, it looks like we got some work to do.
Yes.
Good work, too.
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, that's great.
Yes,
ma'am.
I wanted to tell you that we have a flyer on Facebook, and I can email. You can go to my Facebook and find the flyer information for the flyer. But feel free to create another one. I like your artwork.
Thank you, Miss Lorraine. I have it. I've actually been posting it around in the California clubs, you know, for people that are around the Bay Area to just come out and part in this very, very good event. And I'm super excited for you guys. Oh, my goodness. This is wonderful.
Oh, thank you. So when should I look to hear from someone about the book, writing the book?
Yes, ma'am, you sure will. You'll hear from Aaron and I. We're going to get the contact information from Leisha, and then we'll both get on with you, and we'll see how we can lay this down and get this done.
All right. Okay. Well, I look forward to hearing from you, okay?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lorraine. Tell Greg I said hello.
You know Greg?
Yes, I know Greg. Yes, ma'am.
I'm speaking to.
Miss Leisha.
This is Leisha.
Oh, you know my boys?
Huh?
You know my boys?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm Regina's daughter.
Son?
I'm Regina's daughter.
Whose daughter?
Regina.
Oh, no. Oh! Oh, my Oh, my God. Oh, this is just beautiful. This is beautiful. Oh, my goodness. I know when you said Aberdeen name so clearly, most people get it mixed up if they don't know him. They would say Abadi or something. When you said Aberdeen, I was like, she sounds like she knows my boys. I didn't
yes,
know
ma'am.
That. Oh,
says
my
kindergarten.
God.
Says kindergarten.
Yes. Yes, well, I love you. Thank you so much.
He was calling me
while I was on the line, so I'm going to call him back now. He's probably wondering why I didn't answer the call, but when I was doing the interview, he was calling in.
I'll call him now.
And let him know. Okay, Leisha? Let's see
yes,
in touch,
ma'am.
Okay?
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, that's so sweet.
That's great. This was an awesome show.
Yes, it was. It was great. And we thank all the callers for calling in. And we thank all of our chat room activity. We always have the certified author's wife in there. She's always supporting us. Love her to death. We thank her for her constant support of the show. And all I can say is, Aaron, drop that beat. Good night, everybody.
Is this the
Good
right
night.
Mama this time?
Yes. Yep.
love and care for me. Them skies were gray. Whenever I was down, you were always there to comfort me. No one else can be what you have been to me. You will always be, you will always be the girl in my life for all time.
Mama, mama, you know
for me, had always been around for me, even when I was bad. You showed me right from my wrongs. Yes, you did. And you took up for me when everyone was down on me. You always did understand. You gave me strength to go on.
There were so many times looking back when I was so afraid. And then you come to me and tell me I could face anything. And no one else can do what you've done for me. You'll always be, you will always be the girl in my life. Ooh, oh.
Mama, mama.
Food to my soul.